Thank you very much. So yes, I'd like to talk to you about this system. We call it FLIC. And this talk is about developing application-specific network services. It's joint with a number of people from UK academic institutions, Imperial College, Cambridge, Nottingham, and Kent. So what am I talking about when I talk about application-specific middle boxes? Let's take something really simple we all know, like a load balancer. So if we want to express a typical equal cost multipath load balancer, in pseudocode, it might look something like this. It's doing packet processing, process a packet, and we say that the destination is going to be a hash across various parts of that packet header, the TCP source port, the IP address, and forward the packet to that destination. So far, so simple. And some things to observe about that. It's only using header data. It's using layer 2, 3, 4 in the ISO stack. Actually, it's only using 3 and 4, really. The packets are choosing from a limited number of fixed formats, the TCP or the UDP. And the basic unit of data here is the packet. Now let's think about something different. Facebook, I believe, in their architecture uses Memcache Dereuter. Now what this is basically it's a load balancer for Memcached, a key value store. So here, the client is sending GET or SET requests for key values, and that's being forwarded to one of several backend servers. And the processing looks the same in this pseudocode. We're processing a key value pair. The destination is a hash on the key, so we're splitting the key space across the backends, and we're forwarding it. So far, so similar. There's a mapping between those two. What's different? Firstly, all these applications are going to have very different data formats. Memcached, key value pairs in their particular format, but that's their special format for Memcached. If we're doing HTTP load balancing, we're going to need a very different format. Here, our basic unit is the TCP flow. We're not doing packet processing anymore. We're dealing with flows. And one packet is not one data item. These key values could be small, many of them crammed into a packet, or they could be large, spanned over several packets. They could split across packet boundaries. Application-specific middle boxes are deployed quite widely. So this comes from a survey of 57 network operators, and they were asked about what was in their data center. So on the left, you can see there's quite a few middle boxes deployed. There's layer 3 routers and layer 2 switches, but then we split out what the middle boxes are. And the ones I'm ringing there are the ones which have some application-specific, some packet data processing. They're not just using headers. So, for example, application-based firewalls, proxies. And as academics, we're contributing to this. So if you go through our research literature, we're always proposing new application-specific middle boxes. Here are just a few from recent conferences. And it's not just these are things aren't staying in academia. Yoda is a deployed system. And of course, I mentioned Facebook's Memcached Dereuter, which they widely deploy. If we want to create a new application-specific middle box, how are we going to do that? There's two things we'd look for in the system we're going to deploy with. Firstly, we might want it to be easy to create our deployment. We don't want to spend months and months writing code, reinventing the wheel, but we also want it to be expressive. We want to be able to actually say the logic, state the logic of our new middle box system within this system. Now, a traditional choice is C, C++ code written from scratch, and that's what you might think to do if you were writing a new application-based load balancer, but pretty difficult to do. We're talking tens of thousands of lines of code. You're going to need a skilled network programmer to get that performant. It's difficult. You might use something like ClickOS, wonderful system for packet processing. It's based on a modular system, so a lot of common packet processing operations are in there already. You can chain these modules together. Very simple to build things. But what it is good at is packet processing. It's not so suited to application-level processing. We could write new modules for Click, but then we're back to getting out our C compiler, our C++ compiler, writing things from scratch, and it's not ideal for flow-based abstractions. Software-defined networking is another technology we might think of, but most SDN technologies we're familiar with are usually dealing with the packet as the basic unit of data. So they're nice to work with, but it's hard to get them to deal with application-level systems. Now, what we propose is something we call Flick. Let's take a simple old-school data center, populate it with a few typical middle boxes, an IP firewall, WAN optimizer, some load balancing, the memcache derouter. And what I'd like to hypothesize is, could we unify all of those that are application-specific into a single device, reducing the number of devices, and creating our system Flick for application-specific middle boxes? So what are the challenges in making this general system for application-specific middle boxes? Well, firstly, I said we want our developer to do this easily. We want somebody to be able to get and come up with a new middle box and implement it in hours or days, not months or years. So the second challenge is performance. When I say to you general system, probably the first thing you're thinking is, well, is that going to be fast enough? Is that going to really be as good as hand-coded, tweaked C, C++? So we need our performance to be similar to a specialist system written from scratch, hand-coded. And finally, we want some degree of isolation. If I say we're going to combine these things into one box, probably one of your early worries is, well, if my load balancer is in the same box as another middle box, are they going to compete with each other? Are they going to fight for resources? Is one going to starve the other out? So we've got a safety and isolation challenge. So this is the system we propose. The first part of our system is the Flick program, a domain-specific language we've come up with, specifically targeted at application-specific middle boxes. You can express simple middle box functionality in tens of lines of code, not tens of thousands. These programs compile to an abstraction we call the task graph. The idea of the task graph is we break the middle box functionality into small units of work. We call them tasks that can be scheduled in parallel, and we express data flows between them in channels, and those become our task graphs. And the final piece of the puzzle is the Flick platform. So this is the code that runs on your box, the running implementation. It takes the domain-specific language compiled into C++, integrates that, and handles all the nasty business of network connections, et cetera, so threads, scheduling, handles all the mucky business of being a middle box. So let's talk about these in turn. Let's first have a look at the language. That is the complete implementation of a very, very basic memcached D. And what are the principles of our language? Firstly, the process is the basic unit of code, and a process states how typed data moves about the system, how it changes, and where it goes to. We were interested in safety, so what we've done is insist on restricted control structures. You can't write an unbounded loop in the Flick language, and hence the execution time on any data item is itself bounded. And the language has strong typing for safety. So here, again, is that memcache derouting example. And, as I said, the structure of this code allows us to break down our task into these smaller task units. But also it contains convenient abstractions for the middle box. So the first thing we have is a type declaration, because we need to know about the application-specific type, but we only use necessary fields. So that's a key-value pair from memcached, but we're only including the key, because the only thing we do with a value is forward it on. There's our process. And this right arrow notation is saying backends connect to the client connects to one of the target backends, and that expresses the data connections in the system. And finally, this is the bit that's doing the work, such as it is. We're hashing on a key and sending to the appropriate backend. Now, you might say, well, hold on, how are you going to parse the wire format data? What we've done is extended existing work from program called SPICY, which is a wire format parser, originally presented at IMC 2006. And we've extended that a bit. And we can express really quite complex formats like HTTP, which if you've ever delved into the HTTP protocol, it is surprisingly complex. But we can express it in this parsing format. One of the things we've done for efficiency is we only extract the fields required for our processing. So we express the full HTTP parse, but then when our processing language only requires the URL, that's the only bit that's extracted by our language. So it's more efficient than a full URL parser that takes out all possible fields. So let's have a little quick look at this. Really simple. Extras len is an unsigned int 8. So fixed with fields dead easy to deal with, as you might expect. And here, this subsequent field is just a byte field. Its length depends upon previous fields. And so we've got self.extrasLen saying that's the length of that field. Real simple. The next section is the task graph, this abstraction that allows us to schedule things well and allows us to take advantage of parallelism. So here again is our memcached derouter expressed as a task graph. And we're separating input, processing, and output tasks there. We're maximizing the parallelism our system can get. So input TCP flow comes along, and we're using that wire format parser in C++ to deserialize into the individual key value pairs we're going to route. This processing task forwards using the hash on the key. This reserializes back to the wire format and sends out the data. The server sends a reply. That's going to go to a new input task, and that's going to do the serializing, and so on and so on. So you can see there's quite a lot of parallelism in that system already. Now, each client connecting to the memcached derouter has its own task graph. So there's many, many task graphs in the system. But there's also different types of task graph. If you look at this middle one, that middle one is merging four TCP flows down to one TCP flow. So there's some data parallelism in some of the middle box operations we're dealing with. And so the system has data and task parallelism. And that brings us on to the fourth component, the third component of the platform, and the job of this, as I said, is to do scheduling and to work out how these TCP connections should be handled. So efficiently handle TCP connection setup and teardown, manage memory allocation smartly. We want to avoid things like dynamic malloc, which is going to slow down the execution. And schedule tasks fairly, because we don't want one task taking up a lot of CPU to starve out a task light on CPU. So the first thing is our application dispatcher. A new TCP connection comes in here. It's got to go to the correct application on the system. And I should mention at this point that one of the little tweaks we use is to use Intel's data path development kit and MTCP. That's a userland TCP implementation. And by doing that, we can dodge a few kernel calls. It's just a little tweak to make the system more efficient. So the application dispatcher gets a new TCP connection, and it decides which of the applications implemented on this system we're going to connect to. The next component we call the graph dispatcher, and this is going to attach our TCP connection to a task graph. And the two possibilities, perhaps this connection needs to go to an existing task graph. So that's fine, the task graph's already there, it's already running, it's presumably already got a few connections to it. Or, depending on the particular application logic, this TCP connection may need to be connected to a new task. And in this case, we have a graph pool, pre-constructed graphs already built in memory, so we can pluck out a new graph from our pool of graphs appropriate to the task at hand, connect up the TCP connection. So, looking over there, we've got a lot of tasks. They're all receiving data. The final component is the scheduler, consisting of a task queue and some worker threads pinned to CPU cores. And when a task gets new data, either from a TCP connection or from another task, then that task is added in to the schedule queue. When a worker thread has no work, it goes and finds a task from the queue. And another of the safety optimizations we have here is that tasks are given a limited time on a thread. So after every single data item, a task checks, has my time on this thread expired? If the task goes over its time, it then leaves, puts itself back on the queue, and makes way for another task. So that way, heavy CPU processing tasks cannot get more time than another task that wants it. So finally, let's move on to evaluation. We're going to look at the load balance instead of the memcached example, just because the comparison points are more familiar in the load balancer. So in our experimental setup, clients are going to send HTTP requests to 10 backends. The backends are running Apache. And we're going to, for this experiment, run permanent, persistent TCP connections to and from the load balancer. The non-persistent results are in the paper. We're going to vary how many clients are connected, and we're going to measure latency and throughput using a standard tool, Apache Bench. And there's also this trick, data path development kit, and MTCP, reducing the kernel calls, hopefully increasing efficiency. So here's our experiment, getting the number of clients connected from 100 to 1600, and latency on the y-axis are going from 0 to 20 milliseconds, and obviously with latency, lower is better. Our comparison points are Apache and Nginx, and you can see that we've definitely managed to achieve our aim of comparable latency. And if we add in MTCP to that, we've actually improved things. We've actually got a boost on those systems. We also test throughput in thousands of requests per second, because that's obviously important for an HTTP load balancer. Higher is better, and the same number of clients. And we can see that Flick is getting more requests per second through the system than Apache and Nginx. What we can also see there is that the system starts to be overwhelmed by the number of clients at around about 400 for Nginx, and around the same for the Flick system. That's just because it's dealing with a lot of network connections as well as just sending the data. And when we add MTCP, we actually get a huge efficiency gain there in terms of thousands of requests per second. So the final evaluation we'll do is an evaluation of how well the system scales as we give it more cores to play with. Here, we have to have a little bit of a more complicated setup graph. So this is that merging graph I talked about a little bit earlier. So this is a middle box, and its job is to merge TCP streams carrying data in big data systems. So think about word count streams heading towards a reducer, and you've got an on-path system that's doing some merging of those word count streams. It can help take pressure off your reducers. It can help reduce the amount of traffic. And this work began with the paper NetAgg in Konext. So we've got a binary merge tree there. So there's a considerable amount of data parallelism in that system. And the experiment we're going to do is test how well our system scales. We're going to give it a differing number of cores, increase the number of cores available to our system, and see how it scales. We're throwing three data sets, each of which have a billion words with 8, 12, or 16 characters. And we're going to merge 8 streams and measure the throughput on the output stream. The reason for changing the number of characters is obviously small key value pairs. It's harder to get good output. So let's look how that works. Our throughput is in megabits a second. That maximum there just indicates the maximum of our output link as you measure it with iPerf. So if you're just sending data as fast as you can, that's the maximum that this particular testbed can have. And here is our 16-character words. And you can see the throughput is pretty low when you've only got one CPU core. But as you've built to including 16 in the system, the scheduler is effectively scheduling all 16 cores, and we're getting to the maximum output. As you add in these shorter key value pairs, it is harder to attain the maximum output. There's not much different for the 12 character words, but with the 8 character words, you've almost halved the size of a key value pair, but still we attain the maximum throughput with 16 cores. So to conclude, I've talked about these application-specific services, and they're here to stay for the moment at least. These application-specific middle boxes aren't going away, and packet processing systems really can't do their job. They're not suitable for this kind of operation. The Flick system, we believe, is suitable for being a generic application-specific middle box. Our domain-specific language has this safety-by-design feature. It's actually hard to express things that hog resources, and it means you can really quickly develop new application-specific middle box applications. We have this task graph abstraction, which gives both task and data parallelism. And when we test against real-world systems, we find the performance that we've got is of the same order of magnitude as those real-world systems. We think we can be pretty much as good as something hand-coded. Thank you very much. Questions?
So I have a question.
Sure.
So you said that the system is safe because you prevent, for example, people from writing endless loops and things like that. But it seems that it's possible, for example, in the merging of streams example, that these programs have to store some local state, right? Do you also bound the amount of state that a program stores?
So there's not local state stored on these tasks, or rather the amount of local state is bounded so that they cannot request more state.
Okay.
Is this thing on? Okay. Boris Fagan, Pure Storage. I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
So first one is, have you thought about how failover fits into the system? What are your thoughts on that?
We have thought about it, but we haven't solved it. I should come clean. This is a working academic prototype. Do not put it in your data center. Failover is really important. We need to extend our language with some kind of exception-based mechanism. It's something we've thought about. That is an excellent point. It is not something we have yet done.
Got it. Understood. And the second question is, I guess coming back to your point, which you made in the concluding remarks, on the expressivity of the language and forbidding thought crime, as it were, in the language. Is there anything in the type system to enforce, let's say, handover of ownership between the tasks? I'm thinking of the sort of research that was done a few years back on linear type systems for packet processing, that sort of thing.
We actually started thinking about using linear systems like that. The process abstraction basically says the input type of this processing is X, the output type is Y, and those types must match. So to that extent, we ensure that we get output of the correct type and only handle input of the correct type. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, to some extent. Thank you.
Okay.